Blog Talk Radio.
But they're engaged.
Doesn't matter, it can't happen.
Why not? It's bound to come up.
It's impossible. Lois could never have Superman's baby. Do you think her fallopian tubes could handle his sperm? I guarantee he blows a load like a shotgun right through her back. What about her womb? Do you think it's strong enough to carry his child?
Sure, why not?
He's an alien, for Christ's sake. His Kryptonian biological makeup is enhanced by Earth's yellow sun. Lois gets a tan, the kid could kick right through her stomach. Only someone like Wonder Woman has a strong enough uterus to carry his kid. The only way he could bang regular chicks is with a kryptonite condom. That would kill him.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Yes, folks, it's that time. It's time to get hard body karate. This is the double duty show, double feature show, the Comic Shop at 6 p.m., and, of course, Afternerd featuring Captain Kirk at 7 p.m. Folks, we're just going to do the damn thing. No muzak in the beginning. I just want to really just get into the topics. First up, we've got to talk to Captain Kirk. Captain, time to beam on up. Let's get to it.
Have a ride. Let's do it.
Okay, then of course there is the uncanny Daryl B.
Late night alcohol and watching Joel Schumer's take on Batman really does not mix, folks. Warning label.
Although you might need that, you might need some libations to look at that stuff. With him under the control of those films, I think you might get a pass on this one, Daryl. All right, folks, again, welcome to the Comic Shop as presented by Afternerd Radio. The call-in number, feel free to give us a buzz, don't be scared, is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Let's just do the damn thing. First up, I'm going to go around a bit. I'm not even going to introduce the topics. We're just going to get into it. Number one, the Bourne Legacy film. $41 million takedown knocks off The Dark Knight after about a month. So that's quite impressive. What were your thoughts? Let's go to Daryl B. Did you get a chance to check out this film?
Got a chance to check it out. It's essentially Captain America. Except they have the ability to create a whole bunch of super soldiers. You know, and Renner does a great job in not replacing Matt Damon. He doesn't replace him. And if you look at the timeline of the movie, this one actually goes right alongside. It's happening around the same time as Bourne Ultimatum. It feels like the story's running concurrent with that one. Where, oh God, okay, we got Bourne hitting us over here. And we got Cross hitting us here. What do we do, you know? And I got to give it to the actors. Hey, if you're a sci-fi fan, you have seen a lot of these actors. You know, hell, you've seen a lot of these actors this week. And I told you back when Pleasantville came out, right, that Joan Allen would be one of the most ruthless women in movie history. You know, you'd look at me like I'm nuts, but Joan Allen plays a very effective evil woman. I gotta say that. But this one leave your brain out of it, and just sit down and relax, and you'll enjoy it.
Captain, what were your thoughts on this film?
All right. I saw the, you know, the first three previous movies. I didn't think this movie was as good as any of the three. All right. The acting was up to snuff. The fight scenes were up to snuff, even though they weren't as good as the other Bourne fight scenes, but it was definitely up to snuff. The problem that I have with this movie is the screenplay. The screenplay is not as good as the other movies. Now, if you're into whistles and bells, this may be your movie, because there's some good whistles and bells. But my thing is I look right past whistles and bells. As when you see a movie like Battleship, Battleship has a lot of whistles and bells, a lot of special effects. Terrible screenplay, that's why the movie was garbage, okay? The screenplay here was not up to snuff by my standard, and I think it had a terrible ending also, given at this given time. So I thought the movie was just all right. It wasn't as good as the other three. And, you know, if you're into whistles and bells, it would be your thing. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I was always a quasi fan of the Bourne films. I thought the first two were on point. I wasn't necessarily crazy about the third one. I thought maybe the third one might have been a bit long in the tooth. But, I respect the trilogy, and we have to remember, just to our audience, that we're talking about, a book series written by Eric Van Lustbader. So this Bourne Legacy book is completely, I should say the film is completely divergent from the book. I mean, this is not Jason Bourne. Jason Bourne is, he's a background, filler. So I guess in some ways I'm curious as to, will we see Matt Damon come back in some respects? They never got rid of, there was no pretending that Jeremy Renner was Jason Bourne. He's a totally different character, so I can appreciate that. And it also, I mean, you guys know we're here for a reason. I do like science slash sci-fi stuff. The Captain America element that Darabee referenced, that's one of the things that pretty much pulled me in. Anytime someone becomes a super, that's when I get interested. So I like the way it went down. I like the plausibility of it. But the ending was so abrupt. And that was, it had elements of the Bourne franchise in the sense that it was very hyper, very quick, fighting scenes were very exciting. But then once it stopped, it just stopped like abruptly, like it hit a brick wall, and then it was over. So that disappointed me.
Yeah, you did kind of feel like, okay, now what? Wait, it's over? Hold up a second. Because I was looking for a climactic fight and finish, and Captain's on point with that one. It just left you like, okay, wow, that finished, man. So
all right,
you both corrected that one.
All right, we have a caller. Let's open up the lines. Let's see what this person's take is on this particular film. Again, feel free to give us a call, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Let's open up the lines. Let's see what's up. Okay, caller, welcome to the comic shop. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from, 219. What's up?
Hey, guys, it's Chad, just chiming in and checking you guys out.
Chad, what's up, man?
Chad?
Nice to hear
you. Hey, what's going on, guys? Try to catch you guys every Sunday. Love the show.
Appreciate it, man. Right. Appreciate the support. Tell your friends, incidentally.
Will do, man. Will do.
What were your thoughts on The Bourne Legacy, or did you get a chance to check it out?
No, I didn't get a chance to check it out. I will admit that I'm excited because I do like, it seems like in film, especially in this kind of genre, the whole science / science fiction kind of, field of movies, it seems like all Hollywood can do is either a prequel or a reimage, and it's nice to see kind of like a parallel offshoot kind of film. I think that's kind of an interesting take. I think gamers are used to that because a lot of video games that have been released will run parallel with other, with a previous game. So I'm excited. I definitely want to check it out.
Yeah, I thought, I thought the premise I thought the premise was very interesting. That's what pulled me in, because this could have easily been a DVD purchase for me. So pull me, anything that has anything to do with some super soldier situation, referencing my comic book stuff, that pulled me in. It's just the abrupt ending bought me out. And I tell you something else, the fact that he was somewhat chemically, genetically engineered to be this way versus Jason Bourne being more of a mental, psychological sleeper agent, I'm wondering which one, I mean, maybe that might be what brings up the fifth film. What's the difference? Who's better, $6 million man versus $7 million man? I'm just saying, what will we deal with in the next film? And also, the fact that all these other films would be based on the books. I mean, you have the Bourne Objective, the Bourne Dominion, the Bourne Imperative. I mean, everything is Bourne. How are they going to go further into this without Jason Bourne?
Well, I look at it this way. Bourne is the symbol of everything that could possibly go wrong for the corporation / department going wrong. And so that's the way I would label it. And you know what the Bourne series did? They did something that Blade couldn't do. You know, Blade, think about Blade 3. It's supposed to spin right off into Night Stalker. That was the setup. But transitioning from Blade into the Night Stalkers, that's what it was supposed to do, and it fell flat on its face. This transitioned quite nicely from Matt Damon into Jeremy Renner, who did a good job in the role, and if they choose to continue it, it should work. The problem is, like you say, a lot of people aren't going to get, it says Bourne this, Bourne that. I don't see Matt Damon. After a while, you're going to get those idiots saying that, and it'll adversely affect the product, unfortunately.
That's another thing also. I'm going to go do a quick transition, and I want to keep Chad on, actually, for the next segment. But, again, if you're talking about the Bourne, it's called the Bourne Legacy. It has its own lore, its own mythology. That's probably the main thing that caused this film to fall flat. I mean, it was a decent film. It was entertaining. But let's be honest, they called it the Bourne Legacy without Jason Bourne. And without any of the pretense and the actual writing of the book. I mean, the films are based on the book. What was this film based on? It was totally something that was just made up. It's not the Bourne Legacy. That's probably why it falls flat. And going forward, are they going to just wing this? I mean, it appears that this was created by winging it in some respect. What do you think about that, Daryl?
Well, hey, you know what? You don't have to use Bourne as part of the title. You could always say, you could use the James Bond method, You make the title of the movie something else, all right? And it's based on the series, the Bourne series of books. You add that disclaimer, and it's not a one-for-one thing. After all, we're comic book fans. We have to deal with movie interpretations of our characters that aren't quite what we're used to. Hello, X-Men First Class. I'm talking to you. Not quite what we're used to. we have to adjust. And for Renner to take over the product and it's going that way, I wish him luck with it. But there's a lot of us in the public who are going to be like,
oh, wait, where's Matt Damon at? What's going on? I thought Renner was only going to be in one movie. I want Matt Damon. What the hell? You know that's going to happen.
Well, you know what? I want to take a quick musical break. Chad, hold on. I want to bring you into the next segment. I want to talk about two specific storylines that I just want to get your opinion on. One of the storylines I did not write it up as an advertising thing. I did mention the return of the Illuminati in the latest New Avengers. Now, I see Daryl groaning already. But I'm not a fan of this AVX thing. I mean, I'm just not a fan of it. But this particular story, I do like it when Bendis writes the Illuminati. When these major figures get together, I like the way he writes it. So that, I advertised that particular storyline to talk about, but there's also something else I want to attach to it. The expansion of the Black Panther mythos in the last Fantastic Four. Now Black Panther, T'Challa, is the king of the dead. And, you know, we're not getting this, we know I'm going to gripe about this, Daryl. We're not going to see this in any kind of film interpretation, at least not yet. But the fact that they keep on giving Black Panther more heft. You know, Christopher Priest did this, and now they're getting more into this alternate Wakanda, sort of. You know, this mystical Wakanda. I mean, I find it fascinating. You know, but
the only problem is, you brought up AVX. and like I said, after the break, we'll talk about this.
All right, folks, hold on. This is, speaking about animation, this is Gorillaz. Gorillaz and Stylo. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
Love electricity, shockwave, central power on the motherboard, yes. Push up, overload, legendary, heavy glow, sunshine, thunder, roll, keep this on. Yes, the lantern, burn, burn, man, easy, and broadcast so raw and neatly. Thunder, roll, sunshine, work it out.
Vibe so right, I tell you I gotta get it. Grew so tall, though I used to be a midget. And we go, got speed low. Booking agents, so we never do a free show. Color fear not, confidence can make fear drop. In the game, on a plane, till our ears pop. I look at life like, what's the purpose of it all? Stick with us and you'll never see your budget fall. Stay true, they can't corrupt us all. We fresh in LAX and still my mother calls. In Cali, I'm a big man, Paul Gasol. Mathematically speaking, I think it's problem solved. I wish I had time to address challenges, but it's not enough space on my calendars. Head to tail, I'm living very monetary, living very visionary, searching for the meaning like a dictionary.
Go for blossom in your soul. When you know your heart is when the make go fly.
Vengeance. I keep it moving, I'm just gearing up my engine. You don't know shitty, and you don't gotta mention I'm inching. Prime Minister shit, Winston. But I'm still a dog, bring the kennel in. We could serve anybody that wanted, we Wimbledon. 2010, the name scribbling. Rap playing ball, I'm spitting it and I'm dribbling. Halo focus for a minute, here's Ritalin. Think about this and I'm thinking about that. Like how my life would be if I never wrote a rap. Would I load a gap? Wanna say something and probably hold it back? It's what I owe to rap. Cause before, my future was Coca-Cola black. And doing what you love makes your heart race. And whenever we do it, we doing it at our pace.
Oh,
that's it.
Go for blossom,
I like that.
In your soul. When you know your heart is light, electric is the love. When I'm in your
Okay, a dose of some hip-hop funk. That was Stylo, performed by, why did I forget the name of the group? Oh, Jesus, I'm losing my mind. I need some ginseng. Holy, what's the name of the group, gentlemen? I just did it before, now I forgot. Oh, well, let it come back to me. It happens. I had a brain fart. All right, getting back into the fold.
Gorillas.
Bring Chad back. The Gorillas, right. Oh, jeez. God. I just announced them. All right.
It's funny. I was screaming Gorillas while I was on hold.
Sorry about that. All right. And again, folks, feel free to give us a call, just as Chad has done, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Every once in a while, I will highlight a particular storyline that I find just interesting, like, or I just like. And I have to admit that I chuckled while reading the latest, the new Avengers, issue 29. Now, I chuckled about this specific storyline, but I'm not really digging this main event. Now, every season, whether it's on Marvel side or on DC, they have these main events, Civil War or what have you. This time around, it's AVX, Avengers versus X-Men. And I just don't like the premise. I mean, for those who may be unfamiliar with this particular event, it deals with the X-Men protecting who is the main Hope. Oh, jeez. Protecting Hope Summers. And she is supposed to be the new Phoenix. It goes completely north or south, and now some of the mutants themselves are sharing the mutant power. The Phoenix power. And they want to reshape the direction of the world. And that much power in the hands of these mutants is uncomfortable to the regular human / superhuman community. You know, heroes going after heroes. I mean, we saw this in Civil War. Civil War, for some reason, seemed to work a little bit for me. It dealt with government involvement. This one now, the premise just doesn't make any sense to me. I don't agree with it. But I do like the way Bendis wrote this particular issue, and I like the way that he writes the Illuminati. Now, the Illuminati implies a clandestine group, but this is the Marvel Illuminati, folks. We're talking about the major players, major power brokers in the Marvel Universe getting together in secret and planning. And when they get together, they let their hair down. They speak more candidly, more realistically. It's not like 1975 Marvel or 1965 Marvel discussions. The dialogue is a little bit more honest. And one thing that made me chuckle out loud while reading it, now I don't know if Daryl, I guess he's groaning already about this book, but for some reason I like this particular issue. Not that I like AVX, I like the way this was written. The fact that you have Professor X, you have Reed Richards, you have Doctor Strange, you have Tony Stark, Captain America, and they're all waiting for Namor. Namor has been corrupted by the Phoenix Force. So Namor's relationship with Captain America dates back to the 40s. So everyone is believing, except for Captain America, that Namor is not going to show up. He's been corrupted. Why would he show up? Captain America, that's his friend, that's his boy. He's going to show up. Anyway, Reed Richards comes in and greets Doctor Strange. He says, hey, Doctor Strange says, Dr. Richards. And Iron Man says, why do you guys go into this doctor thing? You just want to say that you're doctors. I have 3 doctorates. You don't see me saying this. And then Reed Richards says, okay, Dr. Starks. I couldn't stop laughing. It was more of a real conversation with dudes. Now, what are your thoughts on this, Dara? I see you were groaning.
My thoughts have been on it as... Let me put it in a clear, concise manner, all right? And I love Bendis when he's writing powers. I love Bendis when on stuff like Jinx and Torso, you know, with that. It's just these voices aren't what I'm used to from my heroes. Even with the hair let down and all of this, you know, these are some of the smartest men on the planet, all right? And you know each other. Why put up it floored the whole premise of it, from how they started this conflict to how when the Phoenix Force finally arrives, how they handled it. If you look backwards from this, from how they're doing it right now, I feel like, well, if you guys talk all the time or periodically like this, then how come you couldn't do a better solution in the beginning? Hey, you want to know how this gets redeemed by me, this whole storyline? At the end of this, the surviving Wakandans should have a shoot-on-site mandate for Namor anytime they see him. I mean, that's going to lead into the next part of this conversation. They're like, because there's stuff that has been done here across all the books that isn't consistent. So Namor as Phoenix can wipe out all of Wakanda, but in like three panels. But White Queen had problems getting rid of one Sentinel in Avengers Academy. What? Spider-Man, by himself, right, takes on the Colossus Phoenix and gets pummeled but doesn't die. What? You know, there's stuff, and it happens with all their crossovers and stuff. There's stuff that they do for the cash grab that if you're trying to look at it intelligently, you just scratch your head and go like, really? Really? Back to you, sir.
All right. You make some valid points, but I mean, that was a little bit disturbing, what you just talked about. I remember reading that where he does get pummeled. But then again, these are heroes. That's another thing, too. They're really not going to. There's going to be a little bit of a holdback, wouldn't you think, Daryl? I mean, there's going to be some degree of, I really don't want to kill this guy. That's what makes it difficult when heroes fight heroes.
Okay, again, Namor, the whole freaking country of Wakanda, there's got to be reparations for that. There's got to be. This is not a Batman Joker situation where, okay, I'm going to put him in Arkham, and then he's going to come out and kill him like 10, 20 more people, and then I'll put him back in Arkham. He took out the whole country. You know, Black Panther should be like, I don't care if he's Avenger. I don't care if he's friends with the Fantastic Four. He took out my motherland. You see Black Panther in a suit, throw him into a microwave or something, and see how long it takes before Namor explodes.
You know, and that's another thing, too. I mean, that kind of defeats the, you know, the whole lore of Wakanda being unconquerable. Wakanda's never been conquered. So doesn't this, like, change things up, too? That's changed now.
And this goes to Bendis, and this goes to, like I said, the reason why I appreciate Hickman and Gage in their books is they have openly made fun of the whole premise of this. Just because, you know what? Guys, I know this is the new direction for Marvel, and it's been the new direction of Marvel, but there's a reason why I read comic books. I want to see heroes take on good villains. This hero versus hero thing, it got real boring during Civil War. It got downright stupid during Secret Invasion. It's been stupid for a long while now. Could I get a good villain? And I'm not talking about doing like Doom War where you take a good villain and make him retarded. Sorry for all intelligence impaired people out there, but I had no better word to use. I mean, seriously. And again, the masses are eating this up. Oh, the new AVX. I gotta. And I'm groaning with my. I'm doing the Picard facepalm. Every time I hear somebody like this, like, this is the coolest comic book ever. Ugh. And there it goes. I just got another aneurysm.
All right, let's go to chat. Chad, are you familiar with this particular issue, or have you been keeping up with the AVX storyline, or are you even liking the AVX storyline?
Two yeses and not really. I mean, I've been keeping up. I'm familiar with it, and it not really is. You know, I think that this would have been great as maybe a one-shot, but I think, you know, I'm tired of these giant crossovers because it seems like we've gotten away from really good storytelling. And, you know, I got to agree with the whole idea of we read comic books, see good guys fight bad guys, and it's like every summer there's this, you know, there's this conflict, and it's just about selling books. You know, you have a conflict that spills over into like eight different books, eight different titles, and people who are big fans will run out and spend the money, and you know, walk out of the comic book store $40-$50 worth of books. Where, you know, I remember back in like the 80s when this whole crossover thing really first kicked off with Secret Wars, the original. It was, you know, it was one book. It ran, you know, the books mentioned it, but it was one book where Secret Wars was. But it was still good guys, bad guys. But to me, that's when things kind of started falling apart, and that heroes were being too human, and, you know, these petty squabbles in between them were spilling out. And while we don't like the writing, it really is just, it comes from economics. People spend the money, and, you know, the companies will keep doing it.
Captain, do you have any thoughts on, I guess, what Dow's been saying, that, you know, the storylines are getting a bit thin, and, you know, like, personally, I mean, listen, I have to admit, I'm growing a little bit weary of these major crossover events, and you come up with buckets. But at the same time, you know, every once in a while, I will acknowledge a specific issue that might have had it right. I mean, I like it when the heroes have regular banter, when they come out of costume and they kind of talk, because they know each other for years. I like that familiarity. I like that kind of ribbing kind of talk. But as far as the overarching premise of AVX, you know, what do you think about that?
Well, good guys need to verse bad guys. That's the premise of pretty much everything that we do. That's just cops and robbers also, going back to way back from the beginning of time. In my opinion, it doesn't work for any extended period of time. It's more or less like, as Chad just said, it's good for a change-up because of the man. Unless you have a character such as Hulk, who's actually a misunderstood character a lot of times. He goes both ways. He's a hero. Then one minute he's seen as the villain. Unless you're doing it with somebody, characters that are like that, it really will not work for an extended period of time. You need that premise. Good guy, bad guy. Superhero, supervillain. And depending on your nature, you're rooting for each one. You know, depending on your nature, you could be going either way. But that's what we still need. If you're on a supervillain guy, you're a supervillain guy like I am, you know, you still need a superhero for the supervillain to fight. It needs to be on that premise. So that's my thought on it. It doesn't work for any extended period of time. That's why you always see it going back to that premise, because that's what really works.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me a lot of, like, when you're a kid, you know, you always have two kids getting together, and they're like, oh, yeah, well, you know, Captain America could beat up Daredevil. No, it couldn't. You know, that's what little kids do. It's cool to see it in, like, a one-shot book, you know. But, I mean, these characters have been around so long that it's like, you know, I don't see – it's like Daredevil is to fight Captain America. They've known each other for, like, 20 years, and then they're going to beat the snot of each other and go back to being friends. You know, I think Civil War worked just because the time that we're in now, you know, after, you know, so many terrorism fears and stuff like that, the kind of idea of a not-so-safe world worked with Civil War. But I just think that the Marvel and DC have beaten us senseless with gigantic crossovers. Every like, couple months, it's a big crossover. And the X-Men, I'm surprised any mutants are left alive, because the last, like, 10 crossovers have been about how many mutants they can wipe out. It's old. I mean, what they think is new is just old because it's been done so much.
And yeah, Chad is right in that respect. In another way too, is and my fundamental problem with this whole thing has been there's been such a cross pollination of the freaking teams by now. That's my second one a day. You got Beast. Beast has been a long time Avenger. Scarlet Witch. She's been an ally to the X-Men, an enemy to the X-Men, and a longtime Avenger, okay? Wolverine is on every freaking, there's my third one, X-Men team now. X-Men and Avengers team now, okay? If you are with the team and you've been serving next to the team, how is any of their reactions going to surprise you here? I mean, the first couple of books of this thing that I looked at before I just decided, you know what, I love my brain so I don't want to freaking ruin them. okay? I don't want to ruin them anymore. You have people acting totally different.
Creature is driven by rage.
Than how they've been written in the past. And to a long-time reader, okay? I know these books here was made for the ADD crowd, but for a long-time reader who's read these characters up and down, and you're seeing how they're acting here, you gotta go like, okay, yeah, you know what? It's got nice looking artwork, but these characters, I don't know who the hell these characters are. These aren't the characters I've read.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
And finally, it's hard to read this when you end up hating every hero that's in the damn thing. Every hero. Name one.
Like Metamorphosis occurs.
I'm done.
Sound angry there, Darryl. All right.
All right. I must give kudos to Chad on one thing. You said a number of things that I thought were important, but the whole thing about Civil War, and I thought Civil War had its problems, but the fact that it tapped into real-world vulnerabilities, real-world issues, the whole thing about government, or should I say superhero registration, it seemed like it made a lot of sense. I could actually see the what's the word I'm thinking of? I could see the political aspect on both sides of the fence. I could see Captain America's point of view, and I could see Iron Man's point of view. So it just on that particular event, it worked. This one doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah,
it just
you know
just
even with the Civil War, it was you know I mean, and I totally agree with what we just said earlier. It's like these characters can't be the characters that they are now. They can't have these vengeful fights and go back to just everything's okay in the next team up. They almost need a new crop of heroes that can establish new history and new mistakes and new relationships only to break them for with some sense of permanence. We can't have Iron Man, Captain America beating the snot out of each other, and then in Avengers Prime, it was the most, schlocky makeup of ever. They went to some magical land with Thor, and they came back like, the three brothers that we've always enjoyed. So it's just, you can't take 20 characters and over, 50 years, just put them through the ringer with any kind of believability, even though I know it's comic books.
One other thing, too, Daryl. Are these books, listen, it is a big cash grab. We have all these different books tapping into their version of AVX, all these different titles. And in this particular title, you have Namor having the power of the Phoenix, but didn't he lose the power of the Phoenix?
Yeah.
Where's the matchup with all the other books? Because I already read that he lost the power and that the other, the remaining mutants they've absorbed the power that Namor lost. Now, in this issue, Namor comes full Phoenix. What's up with that?
Again, it's inconsistent with the editorial. It's inconsistent by, like, I'll use my Firestorm theory on this one, right? If during Blackest Night, Ronnie Raymond kills your girlfriend right in front of your eyes, okay, it's only natural that all of a sudden to be Firestorm, you gotta, as Jason Rush, you have to partner with Ronnie Raymond, the dude that killed your girlfriend / wife, to be a hero again. You have to partner with the guy you have to hate most of all, because he killed your girlfriend and wife. And to a lot of people, that is interesting storytelling. Well, this one, it's like they took Namor and they blindfolded someone and had a set of guards and gave everything that they, okay, first of all, zap. All right, Namor is going to be one of the guys that gets the Phoenix power. Next up, zap. He takes out a city. Zap. It's Wakanda. Zap. He gets kicked out of having the Phoenix Force. Now you have the full powers of the Phoenix Force. back. Now, we don't know what we're doing next because that dart didn't hit the board. It's Marvel's writing for the moment without a plan. And okay, you just took, again, I gotta say, you just took up the whole country of Wakanda, right? Did you take out New York? Did you take out Washington? Wait, they already took out Washington. Sorry about that. Because you take out, it kind of just pisses me off that, oh, Wakanda's the city you take, or Wakanda's the country you take out. Just because of everything we've discussed the past 3 weeks and every stupid statement Marvel's made, it feels like a slap in the face. And to have it go down in this cheap ass storyline is.
Let's turn things around a bit. I do want to talk about the JLA story, but before we get to that, I did mention the Black Panther storyline. That they expanded his mythology, and I like it. I like when they do that because you know the character came in somewhat mysterious in 66 with his appearance in Fantastic Four, and over the years, I mean, it's taken damn near 45 years to expand him. But you know now you literally are able to have two Black Panthers. You know, his sister took over. I'm not going to go into the whole thing for our audience, but now you know. Essentially, the Black Panther has his mythology, just like Thor has Asgard, just as Hercules has Olympus. So, what are your thoughts about that? I mean, you know, Darren, I'm going to go back to you on this. I'm going to keep this brief. I've always wanted to see, because he always referenced the Panther God. You know, he talked about this early on. It was always this hint of this kind of realm. Now, we see that the realm exists. I mean, it went back to Christopher Priest's run of the Black Panther. Now it has expanded again. What are your thoughts on this?
What I like here is what Jonathan Hickman is a writer that I've grown to really enjoy just because He lays layer upon layer upon layer of building up a story. And all of his stuff, it feels like you could come into the book, read it, and get the gist of it right away. But if you've been following the book for 6-7 months prior, you could see what he was laying plots down and laying little hints down and laying little nuggets down that hopefully get paid off later. Some of the stuff he puts into his books doesn't have a payoff, but at the same time, he also uses history without changing it totally. Hi, Bendis, looking at you, man. Yeah. But he respects history, and he bends it to suit him. He doesn't just break history and say, well, that history is gone. I'm going to write this. Well, he's essentially combined McGregor, Kirby, Priest, and yes, even the Hunlin versions of the Panther mythos. And he's sort of combined them here and put his own unique twist to it. I mean, City of the Dead? City of the Dead. He's now the king of the City of the Dead. And people are going to be like, wait, what? But if you read it, it made perfect sense. Because that he sacrificed a lot because he didn't want to step on his sister Shuri's toes here. But and at the same time, Hickman gave us the vision of Wakanda being destroyed on a brief panel of some of his future adventures coming up. You know, he laid the building of this world perfectly. And it's why every time they say, well, it's not really believable that we could do a Black Panther film. Hello? Just get Hickman to like the Black Panther film. Please, you have Hickman and Priest get their minds together because Hickman in one issue has done what Marvel said for 10 years can't be done. Really?
All right, one quick thing. I want to go to Captain. Captain, you have something to say, right?
Well, actually, Darryl just said it towards the end of his statement. He pretty much said it. There's enough information, there's enough storyline there in the Black Panther universe to build a whole Asgardian world. There's different gods. There's a whole thing going on with Black Panther. So it's real. It's not that difficult if they really want to make the movie and bring it to the theatrical release. It's just whether or not what they're really dealing with, can it sell? That's what the holdup is from their standpoint. And we know here that it will sell. Doesn't necessarily have to be a $200 million production, but you could do it very well with CGI. There's a lot going on based on what we just discussed here. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
Okay, Chad, you wanted to say something as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say real quick, this is probably going to get me shot, but I'm going to go on the record and say I don't like anything that Marvel has done with the Black Panther in the last 5 or 10 years.
Okay, does that exclude the Christopher Priest run? Or?
Yep, everything. I don't like it. Here's why I don't like it.
You didn't like the Christopher Priest run of Black Panther?
No. Well, really? Let me rephrase it. Let me say it this way. I think some of the writing and the issues have been great. I think some of the artwork and some of the issues were great. I think, you know, Romita does a great Black Panther. You know, I like this, I like that. But overall, as an arc, I feel like Black Panther, like, I feel like somebody at Marvel Welcome said, oh, crap, the only black superhero we have is the Falcon and the Black Panther. Let's do something. And I think that they kind of shove Black Panther down our throats as their token black superhero who's just not in the ghetto stopping, you know, drug pushers and pimps. And that's why the Black Panther sticks in my craw so bad. It's like, you know, where you've got all these other characters that are written with adventure and with storyline in mind, it feels to me like every time I read a Black Panther story, it's just shoved down to these black.
Well, my rebuttal to that is you got to read these Fantastic Four issues then. You have to read it because it takes the mythos, all right? And I'm not reading it. Honestly, you read it if you're not reading color here. This is a deposed king who's still loyal to his country, who's taking a journey with his friend, and it takes them to a very, very unusual place. And meanwhile, the current queen, the Shuri as the Black Panther, takes the girls out to combat a threat, which essentially grows into a much larger threat than they anticipated. There isn't color to be gained from this. There isn't social standing here. It's straight up an adventure story that makes you think. And we just proved it with the AVX thing. That's something that's been sorely lacking in comic books.
All right. I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, once again, I feel like there's been a lot of good writers who have stepped in to write some of the Black Panther storylines. I just feel like overall character has been, I mean, you guys remember Black Panther was always just that one Avenger who jumped in, or he would occasionally spotlight here in the Fantastic Four and then go back. And all of a sudden, I remember reading the article, and I don't know where, but they were saying that they really wanted to make Black Panther, you know, a major player in the Marvel Universe. And all of a sudden, he just went from, like, 0 to 60. And it's not that, you know, I just feel like somebody woke up and said, oh, crap, we got the Falcon, we got Luke Cage, who still screams out Sweet Christmas, and we got the Black Panther. How can we get black people to keep reading comic books? Let's just suddenly, and maybe it feels like it's artificial, how they've suddenly shoved him into the limelight all of a sudden.
Well, I don't really agree with that. I mean, listen, we know that Luke Cage was very much a blaxploitation character, but he rarely says Sweet Christmas. If anything, he might say it kind of as a tongue-in-cheek thing. It has a whole different connotation than when he did it in the 70s. As far as Black Panther, I wouldn't necessarily say that he's an affirmative action hero, because there's parts of what you say that have validity as far as sometimes you feel that they don't really give him enough play. But at other times, there are flashes of brilliance that Marvel has brought to Black Panther. The Christopher Priest run was the one that really turned things around. He punched Mephisto. This guy has a whole line of scientists. I mean, if you really get into it, he's crazier or more impressive than Tony Stark or Batman. He has his own country. They finally gave him some heft. Now they also gave him a type of Asgardian, godlike mythology. But the problem is they're not consistent with it. So what happens is they open the door and then there's no follow through. But I wouldn't agree that he's just like kind of a character that's just kind of just an afterthought. There are moments like that. He's just not consistent. But when they like this thing with him being the king of the dead is a very fascinating. I mean, you have to read this issue where he walks with Reed Richards, as Darryl said. Now they're bond. There's a bond with these guys. Now, will they follow up with this storyline? There's a mystical bond between Reed Richards and Black Panther. They are essentially brothers now. Will that be explored later on? This is what I'm talking about. They have a flash of brilliance, and then we won't see the follow-through.
Yeah, essentially Avengers Assemble. You know, you just did Thanos Imperative, where you set up a status quo with Thanos, Richard Rider, and Star-Lord. You just had that status quo, all right? Then all of a sudden, you introduce a new Nova, which would be impossible, thanks to what Thanos Imperative did. And now all of a sudden, you brought Star-Lord and Thanos back, essentially just wiping out a couple of good years of DNA storytelling for, hey, Bendis and Bagley are back together, let's bring back Thanos too. And without giving a second to think about what the ramifications are. There are a lot of ramifications set up in this Fantastic Four book for Black Panther. All right, you can't easily wipe what Hickman has set up here out. But the problem is, the next writer will probably wipe it out, and Black Panther will be will turn back into the token black hero that walks in for the Fantastic Four.
All right. We're probably going to have to revisit it, but we only have about 8 minutes remaining. So let's talk about Ben Affleck. Is he or is he not? We're not getting a clear answer on this. It looks like Warner Brothers is trying to coax him into being a director as well as a potential actor in the next Justice League. What are your thoughts on this? I mean, some folks are looking at this interesting and some folks are groaning. Let's go to Catherine on this one.
Yes, I think, you know, first of all, before we even get to JLA, we need to do a Wonder Woman movie, all right, before we even get to that. I think let him do the Wonder Woman movie with a $100 million budget, that would be nice to see before we even get to the JLA situation. You know, we have to build it up a little bit more, okay, because we know that Batman is a god, a very strong character. No need to talk about it. Okay, Superman is a very strong character. We've seen that movie trailer, and it looks pretty good based on what they have shown so far. Also, Wonder Woman is a character that's in the newest sphere of humanity. We know this character. This movie needs to come out before you can do a JLA movie. That Green Lantern movie that we saw, that was trash. Most people will say it's trash, you know, and there's going to be another Green Lantern movie. So far as Ben Affleck doing JLA, the whole, you know, JLA situation, I really don't like him for the JLA movie as far as directing. I don't know as far as, you know, what role he would play in the movie. You could play something. I don't like him to direct that. I'd rather have him direct Wonder Woman. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
All right, Darryl, I'm going to pass the ball to you. What are your thoughts on this, Ben Affleck as the director, actor?
Hey, Ben Affleck could be Snap a Car. You know, do the Jon Favreau thing. I'm directing the movie. I'll be a big character, but I'll set up all the heroes and stuff like this. I read it, and I wasn't shocked that Affleck would get a chance at it because Affleck's last two movies, the more memorable one is The Town, was pretty good from an action standpoint. You know, and one thing the JLA movie's going to need is a lot of action. So it doesn't surprise me. The problem is that someone heard this and went from A to M, just releasing, oh, my God, it's Ben Affleck. Oh, reacting to the name and not the situation. That's the problem with social media. You jump on it, you release it out there. Now we're discussing this it's concrete when nothing was concrete about it, and essentially you killed the deal. You know, you killed the deal by overreacting to it. It might have been good. You never know what the pitch would be, but the problem is it got killed before it was ever born. Over to you, sir.
Yeah, you know, it seems as if I'm not so sure about Ben Affleck the actor, because, you know, people are still groaning about his Daredevil. But since he pulled off The Town, it comes off as if he's a real contender. I'm indifferent. You know, part of me knows that, listen, he's from, you know, he's friends with Kevin Smith. These guys know the material, you know, so I think that there's a respect for the comic book aspect of these characters. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure, but he seems like he's serious enough to know how to do this. You just don't want to mix up his directing ability with his acting ability. That's the main question. Chad, we got a few minutes before we go next door for the next show. Any thoughts on Ben Affleck, maybe not being the director for the upcoming Justice League movie?
Yeah, real quick, I agree. I think we have to separate his directorial ability from his acting. Although I kind of like Daredevil, I think I'm in the minority on that one. But I got to agree with the captain and with Daryl about, you know, before you do a JLA, you got to build up the legs for it, because that's a big movie. And without the proper foundation, it's going to fall. And I hate to say it, but DC needs to steal from Marvel in the way that they set up their movies. You know, they put out, you know, four big films, they tied them all together, and they dropped the Avengers, and they put the proper legs up under it, and I think JLA should follow suit. And I think Wonder Woman would be a good place to start, too.
Yeah, but you know what? See, Mike, I'm curious as to Joss Whedon. Now, we know that he has just been given the green light for round two, for Avengers 2, but is there an issue with him being able to do a Marvel property and a DC property? I mean, he wanted to do Wonder Woman. Now that he's affiliated with Marvel, is it like in his contract that he can only do Marvel films?
Yeah, I think Martian Manhunter would be a great character, too, for them to do a movie on. I think that would be – I think there's a lot of room for Martian Manhunter to really, you know, excite people and to bring people into the DC universe.
Yeah, you have a point there, because actually he can – you know, there's a Superman-like story, but it's not Superman. That might be more fascinating. We've seen – the Clark Kent story played out for 80 years, 70 plus years. Now, you know, you have a modernized take on it, but it's different. He's not human looking.
And you even have a little bit of the Batman, because, you know, he has that alternate personality of a cop. So, I mean, you can do that. You
exactly.
can do a little bit of a gritty street cop angle, and then you can do the Superman alien part. I think Manhunter is a kind of an overlooked gateway for people in a movie arena.
Agreed.
But okay, let's face
okay,
it, they're just biased against Green. Biased against Green.
All right, listen, we got to move on out. We got to close the shop. We got to go next door, gentlemen. Chad, Daryl B. Of course, you know, always welcome. We appreciate the support. And Daryl, if you like, you know, you may want to call back in, because we're going to talk about Serena doing the Crip Walk in a few moments. So,
no problem.
Let's move along. It's been an absolute pleasure. We'll do it again next Sunday, but now we're going next door for Afner featuring Captain Kirk. It's been real. See you guys.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
We'll be right back.
always hear black people say that so-and-so set us two steps back. Now, just to see how far back black people are right now, we got a chart provided by the American Black Progress Association. Now, let's check out the chart. Now, you also hear black people say that we're almost there. Well, as of today, there is 3,653 steps away. Now, every time we've made strides, we've been upset by missteps. You know, in 1960, SNCC and CORE stayed sit-ins. It's a great time for black people, you know, putting us ahead 4 steps, 1, 2, 3, 4. But in 1988, the Crips and Bloods stayed shootout, putting black people 6 steps back and 6 feet under. Hey, now what happened? Roots comes on, gives black people a sense of pride, 5 steps forward. And Roots begins a trend of names, of African names, beginning with Kizzy and Kuta, and ending with Sucretia, Beyonce. 11 steps back. 11 steps back. Beyonce, come on. What else happened? Mae Jameson, the first black woman to go out of space, blasts us 15 steps ahead. But then Little Kim, the first black woman with a kitty out, let us love it. 42 steps back.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Fork, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funky lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in the cosmos, where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a logger.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Salutations and crumpets and goodwill to everyone. Your host, D. Burt, a.k.a. the Afro Nerd, has returned. It is August 12th, 2012. Another fascinating, funky, fiery edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Folks, we have a lot to get into, so I'm just going to get into the quick funk break, very quick. The indefatigable Chris Rock mentioned Beyonce. So I'm going to play a little bit of Beyonce, believe it or not. This is a special remix that I actually dig, a Quentin Harris remix. This is Beyonce Deja Vu. Let's groove.
Thank you.
right, enough of that. You know, I have to give credit where credit is due. Beyonce, you know, if given the right instruction, she worked with Prince for a hot second and she really stepped up her game, she could really be someone. Now, that was a pretty funky cut, a pretty funky house jam. That's why I played it, because I'm not really a big Beyonce fan. But, you know, under the right circumstances, I think there's some talent that should be explored. But unfortunately, you know, time will tell. But I like that particular jam. Again, that was Deja Vu, a special Quentin Harris remix. Folks, time to get into it, time to get into the discourse. Let's get into, well, listen, I can't do this without the captain. Captain, come on board. Time to beam up.
Okay, I'm going to get into a terse, informational diatribe. Now listen, we hear people talk about black leadership. Why is black leadership needed? There's Asian people, there's white people. You don't hear people say white leadership. Why is that? You don't hear people talk about Asian leadership. I'm pretty sure there is Asian leadership, but you don't hear people talking about it. You know why? There's two important things that people must know to go forward. You must have knowledge of self and also do for self. Let's look at Asian people. Asian people, the most progressive minority here, that's what they say according to statistical analysis. They know who they are. They identify with China, Japan, North Korea, or should I say South Korea, or wherever they're from, Vietnam, wherever they're from. They identify with it. So they have knowledge for self, of self, and then they do for self. White people, who most people will say, and looking at statistical analysis, they will say white people are on top of the food chain. They identify with themselves or wherever they're from also. It could be from Italy, it could be from Russia, it can be from Poland or what have you. And they do for self. Black people in this country, not the Nigerian man. The Nigerian man is different. The Nigerian man identifies with Nigeria, which is a place in Africa for the uninitiated. And he comes here and he does for self. Okay? So you see, knowledge of self is very important. The reason why you need black leadership, you need to be led when you are lost. Let me repeat that. When you are lost, you need to be led. Okay? Now, if you have knowledge of self, then you begin to do for self. You're no longer lost. You become God of actually one of oneself, because you don't need anybody or governing body to turn around and tell you this is what you need to do, because you go out here and do it for yourself. But when you're lost, my friends, my fellow listeners, that's what you need. That's why we're always talking about black leadership. Asian people, they're not talking about that. White people, they're not talking about that, even though there is Asian leadership. Even though there is white leadership, knowledge of self, then you will do for self. Then you become God of oneself. Then you don't need to be led by anybody because you know what to do. Now let's get the show started. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Okay, Captain, as always, to our listening audience, you can hear the Captain every Sunday and Wednesday giving his wisdom. I would agree. I would concur with what you just said, definitely. Going forward, I see that we have the great Daryl B. Let me just bring Daryl B. Daryl B. was next door from our previous broadcast on the Comic Shop. Let me bring him on in. Daryl.
Yo, I'm okay. Just sitting on this sideline.
Okay, listen. Okay, I'm going to put you on hold because I'm hearing some background noise. We're going to bring you right back. Hold on. Okay, Daryl's coming back in a few moments. I want to talk about a number of things, some things that were left on the table from the last broadcast, Captain. One thing that seems to have a little bit of seems to have some legs to it would be the Serena Williams dance. She won gold about a week ago, and in a moment of joy, she danced. Well, she danced an infamous dance, the Sea Walk, the Crip Walk. So some folks, you know, there's two sides of looking at this. Some people critiqued it. It was just like a five-second dance. Some people felt like, well, you know, it was a point, it was a moment of her being happy. She won the gold for her country. She wanted to be herself. She wanted to be free. There's the other side that said, you know, maybe you shouldn't do the dance that's affiliated with one of the most ruthless and violent gangs in this country, especially out of L.A. But now we're hearing the Crips are, you know, they're all over the country now. There are Crip factions. Some are related to or connected to the Crips in L.A. Some are not. Nevertheless, there are some Crips, I mean, however they're related to the main Crips, they do this dance, and it's connected to violence, inner-city violence. So some felt that it was inappropriate. So I want to give this to, actually, Daryl, to get his thoughts on what we're seeing here. She won the gold. She's Serena Williams. Should she have done the Crip Walk? Your thoughts.
A little bit better, guys?
All right. Absolutely.
You brought up two things that I had a major problem with, okay? One, the way the media's covered this, all right? Off mic, I brought up an example of Around the Horn and Pardon the Interruption, where they ripped apart Serena Williams for doing the dance. But in another segment, they're praising the Kenyan steeplechaser for doing his dance in the middle of the track after he won. Excuse me. Either both are wrong or both are right. What's the difference between Serena's dancing and the Kenyan dancing? You don't know the background of the Kenyan dance, all right? Now, you just came up with another implication. Serena was born and was raised most of her life in Compton, right? It's what she knows, unfortunately. But by your assertion, does that mean everybody in Compton, because she does the dance, oh, that dance is from Compton, it's a Crip Walk, does that mean by association everybody in Compton's a gang member? There's no good people in Compton. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, Serena has never danced like that before after winning. She was showing joy, okay? Was it the right thing to do? I don't know, but there's no rules against it. Is it like the NFL where after you score a touchdown and you do some sort of little celebration, they're going to throw a flag on you? She just destroyed Maria Sharapova's 6-love, 6-1, probably the most dominant performance in an Olympic tennis match ever for a gold medal, ever. And what do people focus on? Not that she's the greatest tennis player of the time. No, no, no. We're not focusing on that. We're focusing on her dance. This is just as stupid as Gabby Douglas and the hair. Because everybody, your hypocrisy is showing, folks. Back to you, sir.
Catherine has a pretty interesting take on this. Tell us about it. You talked about how this is this is a pop culture phenomenon. It's cross pop culturally. Explain that. Expound on that for us.
Well, unfortunately, in a perfect society, which of course this is not, you know, but in a perfect society, you'll be able to do little tidbits and do little things here and there, and you will not be scrutinized. My personal feelings, she should not be scrutinized for this at all. It's supposed to slip underneath radar, but we live in a society that you spit left when you're supposed to spit right, an article comes out about you. The problem with this Crip Walk or Crip Dance, it belongs to pop culture now. So it's across the board.
Once the rappers started putting it in the videos, and the white kids are doing it, who buy the most rap, by the way, in case you didn't know, to the uninitiated. It's all across America. It's all across the world. Everyone's seen it. It belongs to pop culture. Even though, yes, it's Crips, it doesn't really belong to the Crips anymore, even though they started it. It belongs to pop culture. So when things belong to pop culture, these memes can attach onto you, and you just automatically jump into it. I have done this dance, and Afro Nerd has seen me do it, in the gym, and I'm not a gangbanger. Most people would say the captain is a law-abiding citizen because I've seen the dance so much. I've been out, parties here, there, and I know what the dance stands for. Now, if I was playing tennis or any sport at that level, that very high level, and I got emotional, would I go into the dance? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe I might go into something else I know. I probably would go into b-boying because I know a little something about b-boying. There's a break move that I have a tendency to do from time to time when I get excited. That's what's attached to me. But I could see, because she's not going to be thinking all at all times, when you get really excited. You're caught up in the win. It's an emotional experience. And that's it. She just jumped into it, did my thing. I'm a winner. This is the Olympics. Give me my gold medal. But unfortunately, in this society, as I said before, you spit left when you're supposed to spit right or down the middle. Why did you do that? Article comes out. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Well, it's no surprise where I'm going to weigh on this. The audience, I think, I suspect, knows how I feel on some of these matters. You know what really did it for me? Was when I would go to YouTube to check out what she did. And I'm all about being honest. I will say that as far as how the dance goes down, I like the way the dance looks. I wish I could do that dance, but I stopped myself from doing it because of what it's affiliated with. I remember seeing a Dr. Dre concert DVD when Dr. Dre and Ice Cube and Eminem performed and Snoop Dogg all performed together. And there's a point where Ice Cube does the Crip Walk. And, he has that funky, laid-back, signature California funk sound. And he's doing the Crip Walk. And it's an interesting-looking dance. But when you know that dance is connected to gang violence and that gangbangers that originate with that, that's where it stops for me. Something, as much as I would like to do it, I stop myself from doing it because it just has that bad connotation to it. And let me finish my point, Daryl.
Go ahead.
And as far as things crossing over to pop culture, then we can make that same argument about pants sagging and all those other things that many of us probably do not like that come from prison culture. We can make the argument that prison culture has transcended into pop culture. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's warranted and that it should be done. My issue with Serena Williams is that she does come from Compton. She was coincidentally wearing a blue uniform from head to toe when she was doing it. And then when you see the commenters and YouTube discussing what she was doing, many of them said, "Oh, that's how you do it. She kept it hood. She kept it hood." And I'm saying you're not in the hood anymore. Why do you got to pretend? Why do we have to try to connect ourselves to the hood? She kept it hood, meaning she kept it black. She kept it honest. And I don't affiliate the hood with keeping it honest. I don't affiliate keeping it black because of the hood. We make the hood and honest and black interchangeable. And I take issue with that. I take umbrage with that. That's the reason why I started Afro Radio. One could say that Sonia Sotomayor, who is sitting on the Supreme Court right now, it's a Supreme Court justice, she is from the hood. So why can't her being erudite, being a Latina, being a proud Latina, sitting on the Supreme Court, why isn't she keeping the hood? See, that keeping the hood to me is very phony. That's all I got to say. Go ahead, John.
Wow, a lot to rebuttal there. First, Ms. Sonia Mayer I got to meet her at a Yankee game recently. She was up there with the Bleacher Creatures and stuff. So she was still in the community in the Bronx with the Bleacher Creatures watching the Yankees play. Secondly, where was this outrage when Sam Rockwell did it in Iron Man 2 on the stage? He did a crip walk.
That's true.
There wasn't this outrage there when he started off doing the running man and then he did a crip walk right there. There was no outrage there. And a lot of people watched Iron Man 2. I didn't hear no outrage. Okay? And finally, so if we're going to associate the color blue, which has been longer than the blue, red, whatever, with gangs, Dave, so I guess we should all go back and wait, right? Does this mean we're going to associate Batman movies now with violence every time we see it? Does this mean everything is going to become the Nazi symbol, which was good in the beginning? Read your books for you. I believe it's Captain Tibetan in nature, but since it's attached to the Nazis, you know, you can never see that symbol anymore. You know, or it's always going to be bad. You know, a jubilant dance at victory. It'd be one thing if she did the dance and was pointing at everybody in the crowd going, I hate you all, this is for my real boys. No, it was 5 seconds of joy where she does the dance and she goes, and she said after, I was joyous winning. I was happy winning. It wasn't like, it'd be one thing if she did the dance to mock the opponent, or she did the dance to attack the judge, or she did the dance to attack the fans. No, it was personal. It was joyous. And like I said before, you rip her, but then when the Kenya did his dance for joy after winning the steeplechase, and look it up on YouTube, he does a dance, demonstrative, he even looks like he's throwing a mock spear before he's breaking it down and everything like that, everybody's cheering that. The hypocrisy of this got to stop. And guys, okay. Thank you for having me on. I just need to get that off of my chest.
That's all right. You guys are going to hit it. Well, one thing, and I want to keep you on for just a few more moments, Darryl. You know, you're always welcome anyway. My problem is first of all, with that character in Iron Man, he's not connected. Let's really open this up. He's not connected to the Crip Walk through tribalism, the way that Serena Williams is. Serena Williams, unfortunately, is a black woman from Compton wearing blue doing a Crip Walk. It's a little different than some white guy. He's going against type. Not that it's right. But he's going against type. As far as the other gentleman you mentioned, the other winner from Africa, I'm not lambasting someone who wants to showcase their culture, okay? But the whole thing is we don't know the cultural connotation with what he was doing. We do know the cultural connotation with Serena Williams doing it, and I will tell you, Darryl, that my issue was what really cemented it for me is that when you saw people online talking about how she kept it real and kept it hood, keeping it hood does not do us any favors. That's my problem. We have to fight this stuff, and I just think that we have to be honest about what it really represents. It does represent something infamous. Imagine a German winning the gold medal, Darryl, and he decides to go in and decides to do the goose step from Hitler. He does the goose step after he wins a medal. He's keeping it hood too. We wouldn't like that because there's that tribal connection to being German doing a goose step from a organization that was infamous. The Crips are infamous. Nuff said.
You could do it that way, but what I'm saying is, if
in my opinion is correct, all right,
if she did it in a mocking fashion, it's much more of a story. The problem is, if you're going to come down on her doing that, right, then you're going to come. You should go make it across the board. There are no exceptions. If that's such an affront. Okay, doing the crip walk. She didn't flash no gang sign. All she did was a little dance for 5 seconds. You know, right. If we're going to do that, do it across the board. You can't, no hypocrisy here. And the problem is, a lot party outlets, a lot of people commented on them. They are straight hypocrites. The problem here isn't with Serena Williams. The problem here is with everybody else because, she, like I said, 6-0, 6-1, domination, but no one's focusing on that, and that's the shame of this thing.
All right, let's open up the lines. I think we have a familiar friend waiting in abeyance. Let's open up the lines. Okay, caller, welcome to Afro Radio. Tell us who you are. You're calling from 206.
Hey, what's up, fellas? This is Michael Dean. How you guys doing?
Hey, Mike, what's up, man? Nice to hear from you.
I'm good. Hey, I just wanted to jump
you're on the
in
West
on
Coast,
this
man.
Real quick.
You're on the West Coast. Explain this to
yes,
us.
Sir. Well, I'll say it this way, and I say this unfortunately. Unfortunately, where I live, like, at this moment, if you go outside and do that sort of dance, it's not pop culture. It would be a signification of, yes, I'm rolling with the Crips, and you may get challenged out here. It was ridiculous as that sound to do a dance. It's very real over here. So to me, I look at it this way. I understand, like, why she's doing it and, like, you know, she got excited and da-da-da-da. But I just feel like for her to do it, it means a lot more, I would say, to us as black people who know where it comes from. And there are certain parts of the country, yeah, you can just, you know, play it off as a dance. Like you mentioned, you know, Cube and all of them doing that. I mean, that's cool. They're doing it for entertainment. They're making money off of it. But I guarantee you, Cube or whoever, even Serena, would dare not go in the actual street and do that because they know that is essentially doing gang signs. I'm just being very honest, and I hate to say it because I fuck where I stay at right now, but I dare not do shit like that out here in the streets here because it's ridiculous. And so the thing is, I just kind of feel like what D-Bert was saying is you do kind of got to call them out on that a little bit because, again, there's a lot of things that are taken from gang culture and prison culture that, for whatever reason, black people are tied to this and is put into the popular culture arena and it becomes entertainment and money is being generated. And white people do buy it, but I think the thing is, you won't see those people who buy it into the gang culture, the sagging. They're not going to go to work sagging. You know, they're not going to walk the actual neighborhoods doing that because they know that's their ass. And so when you do that dance, she can do that over there in London or whatever it is in that situation, but she knows not to go on Compton and actually really do it because she'd be a target anyway, and then they would really get on her ass. The Bloods are a real thing. Like, the Crips are a real thing. Like, to me, it's just like, it just puts more madness onto younger people's minds that is sort of acceptable, and we know where it comes from. You know, I look at those gangs, to me, the terrorist organizations. I mean, they're not to the betterment of me. So I just look at them the same way I look at the Klan or something. Now, if they were united for something different, I may have a different opinion about the gangs. But to me, I don't really understand why you would glorify that sort of thing. Especially from where she comes from and where she's at now. It's common sense to say you wouldn't do that. What if Jordan just broke out and started doing the Crip Walk? Really? Like, you're not going to go from Space Jam to Crip Walk. You're not going to go from Serena being on TV. Now you Crip Walk? That's not keeping it real. That's keeping it ridiculous.
I have to agree with you on that, Mike. I mean, my thing is sometimes you just can't give someone a pass because they're happy. You know, I mean, I understand she's happy she won, but that Crip Walk, man, I like the way the Crip Walk looks. I never learned it because I was fearful. If I did it joking around, someone would step to me. It's a serious thing. It's a serious thing. The people living, like you just said, people living under those conditions, it's not so cute. It's cute to be on a tennis court in front of a bunch of white people doing it, but you bring it back to the hood that these people are saying she kept it hood. It's not so funny. It's not so cute. Yeah, but there's a reality attached to it, Darryl. That's my problem.
All right. You guys can attach reality to it all you want. What I was trying to explain earlier is if we ban everything that has been co-opted by gangs, okay, you're banning football jerseys. You're banning all the colors of the rainbow. You're banning dances now. You're banning hand gestures. You're banning... Okay, where's the zest for life? Is it this Fahrenheit 451 that we're talking about? Is it this 1984? If you ban everything that gangs do or gangs have taken as a symbol, if you have banned all of those things, okay, you are you're essentially you're taking out some of the uniqueness of life. My problem is when it comes to this stuff, right? There's too many people out there who, yeah, let's keep it hood. Without doing real research, without doing real thinking of their own, they just assume. Everything is assumed. And once you assume, it makes an ass out of you and me. That's what the word means.
Darryl, if you want, I want you to hang around because I gotta go to a musical break. This is, you know, the show which is moving. I want to do a quick transition, but I suspect this next topic is going to be equally as explosive. Mike, you know you're a friend of the show, so I'm going to keep you on as well. So, gentlemen, we're going to take a quick funk break. When we get back, I want to talk about one of my heroes, Harry Belafonte versus Jay-Z and Beyonce. We got to talk about.
Oh boy.
So
here we go.
I'm pretty sure Darryl has his feelings on that. So, gentlemen, hold on. Let's groove a little, and we'll get back to it. This is, you know what? This is the Far Side. The Far Side special J Dilla remix. She Said. Let's groove, folks. We'll be back in a few moments. Folks are back. Had to do a little bit of specialized editing there. That was The Mighty Far Side, a game from the West Coast, The Mighty Far Side, She Said, special the late J Dilla remix. What hip-hop used to sound like. Not quite the minstrel stuff that we're accustomed to nowadays. Of course, you're listening to the best of urban alternative music here at Afner Radio. Getting back into the fold, folks, of course, feel free to give us a buzz at 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Something that made the rounds on the internet that I find fascinating. One of my heroes, legendary actor and director, actually, Harry Belafonte, was appearing at some function, I believe, on the West Coast, courtesy of the New Yorker magazine. Was it the New Yorker? It might have been on the West Coast. It might have been on the East Coast. Anyway, they asked him a question about social responsibility, and he felt that many of the current stars today, African-American stars especially, are not really socially responsible. And he called out Jay-Z and Beyonce for not being socially responsible. And he said that he thought that Bruce Springsteen was a black person, essentially, because he is not afraid to call truth to power. He's a little bit more politically active. He puts his face out there, whereas maybe Beyonce, at least the criticism is, maybe Beyonce and Jay-Z are busy collecting checks. Captain, what are your thoughts about this legendary actor making these statements?
Well, based on the question, because that's all he was doing was answering the question, I would have to agree with those statements. We also have to remember Bruce Springsteen also has white skin privilege pertaining to that situation. It might work here, it might not work here. It might not be appropriate here, but there's something that everyone needs to recognize. And it's obvious what Jay-Z and Beyonce does. Jay-Z explained it to you. You know, he always explained it to you. He's about the money. He says he would love to rap like Common Sense, but when you make all these dollars, rapping like Common Sense doesn't make sense. You understand? So we essentially know what Jay-Z and Beyonce is about. So I have to wholeheartedly agree in this situation. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, Darryl, what are your thoughts on Mr. Belafonte's comment that he feels that these modern artists, and he calls out Jay-Z and Beyonce specifically, they're not really socially responsible?
Well, the problem is, in this day and age, if you're going to be socially responsible, then you're going to take hits. You're going to take hits from your own race. You're going to take hits from the other races. You're going to take hits because it is impossible to make a social statement nowadays without people attacking you from all corners, all sides. And the perfect example of that is Tiger Woods. Go like, yo, Tiger, all Tiger wants to do is play golf. We all know that. All he wants to do is play golf. But at the time before the whole incident happened with his wife and the affairs came out and stuff, there were people urging him to step out. You gotta carry the flag. You be in the forefront. We need you right there. It goes to how Captain led off the show today. A lot of black people, they're looking for a big leader. They're looking for someone to unite us all underneath the same flag and go straight ahead. Well, we can't have that until each black person looks into their own life and adjusts what's going wrong with it. Sometimes the problems are you got to look within. Can Jay-Z and Beyonce do a lot of good work in the public eye to help African Americans, black people, people of minorities? Can they? Yes. But that's not to say that they haven't done stuff behind the scenes, away from the camera, to help out. And that's the one thing in this statement that Harry makes. He makes it seem like they just take their money and run. They're not reaching out. If you don't know them to comment on them, that's hypocritical. And you notice I've been taking a lot of hits at hypocrisy today, and this is just another one there. I love Harry, but it's a hypocritical statement unless you know everything. Back to you, Miss A.
All right. You know, let's get into the specifics as to what the gentleman said. He said, I'm looking at this actual quote. He says, I think one of the great abuses of this modern time is that we should have had such high-profile artists, powerful celebrities, but they have turned their backs on social responsibility, he accused. That goes for Jay-Z and Beyonce, for example. Give me Bruce Springsteen, and now you're talking. I really think he's black. Now, if you remember, Bruce Springsteen wrote a record talking about Amadou Diallo taking 44 shots. Now, we can talk about white skin color privilege, but because he is white, he doesn't have to talk about a black situation, but he does it anyway. See, it's a little different,
hey,
I think, for him. Yes, Mike, what are your thoughts?
Just I just want to throw in here, you know, I can understand what a person like Harry Belafonte has to say. You know, I kind of put him in the same category when I hear, like, certain comments from Quincy Jones about some of the younger cats and what they do or not doing in terms of music or whatever. Only thing I can say for this, I don't know. I would, for me, he would need to show me examples of what he's talking about. Like, what, where is he getting this opinion from? Like, is he having their ear? Does he know them? Or does he know what they're doing? Or is he just going by what he's not hearing in the media, which is what we would do, right? Like, I'm just a quick search on Google. I see, you know, there's the Sean Carter Scholarship Foundation, and they're giving kids actual scholarships to college. They got college bus tours that go. I mean, there's so many different things. So I'm wondering, what is he talking about? And he's just throwing off these, you know, off-the-cuff remarks. And I won't even address the whole Bruce Springsteen black thing. Like, what, really? Like, come on, man. I mean, I give the boss credit. You know, I'm from the 80s when he was doing this thing. But that's just like saying Bill Clinton was a black president. I mean, that's ridiculous. It's just, what is he talking about? He sounds like, I hate to say, he sounds like a hater. Like, what are you talking about? Like, just because they're at the spotlight, it's easy for you just to go pick Jay-Z, Beyonce, da-da-da. What are they supposed to do? They are artists. They're not social responsibility people. They're artists. Do I look for Prince or do I look for any of the other ones? I look for them to make great music. That's what I'm paying them for. If they do stuff behind the scenes I don't know about, I can't just say, they're not doing nothing. I mean, I don't understand his beef. He needs to explain a little bit more what he's talking about. To me, he's irresponsible to throw out that sort of comment without backing it up and explaining what he's talking about, knowing that he is an influential person. And so he's just throwing more kind of salt on the fire between, to me, like a generational gap between people like him and younger people. He puts himself in a position, somebody look at him and say, oh, man, that guy's a hater. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Like, explain. How do you help him be more socially responsible then? Because you're not going to help him to be more responsible in your mind if you're just going to say, ah, he's so ridiculous, I take this white man and call him more black than him. And now he's playing the whole you're not black enough game. Really? From his history, he would say something like that? I don't understand how he's helping the situation.
Well, a couple of things. As far as Harry Belafonte, he has to be respected because he is one of those folks that has actually walked the walk. You know, he comes from a line of artists, whether it's himself or Sidney Poitier or Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis, Paul Robeson. He considers Paul Robeson to have been his mentor. These guys took a lot of hits, a lot of financial hits in regards to their art. In other words, they did some things that were not considered fashionable, and they didn't care because there was this overarching sense of black pride that fueled them. You know, they really did take a loss. You know, at their time period, you're still talking about hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars that were lost or were at stake because of certain stances that they took. I mean, this man literally walked with Dr. King. So, you know, to be affiliated with civil rights at that time and to try to work in Hollywood is a difficult thing. He did walk the walk. He can talk about this. Now, the issue is that his art was not necessarily in conflict with his politics per se. When someone like Jay-Z, and I hate for him to be the poster boy on this stuff, but when he talks about N-words in Paris and, you know, his whole thing about being a drug dealer, I mean, there's certain things about what he has said on Wax that conflicts with being socially responsible. Same thing with Dr. Dre, same thing with Snoop Dogg. There's a whole line of rap artists that speak in a certain way that one could say conflicts with them being socially responsible. It's like someone who deals drugs.
You can use that argument against the United States government, though. I mean, you can use that against Obama.
It's like someone who deals drugs and then wants to give out turkeys on Thanksgiving. You know, we talked about Meek Mill a few weeks ago. You know, it can be construed as being hypocritical. But in all fairness, the way this was reported, Jay-Z and Beyonce's PR people quickly went on the defense and said, well, this is the line of the things that they've been behind. We just don't know them. So they keep, you know, maybe it's secretive. Maybe it's the media. The media would prefer to talk about the more salacious stuff, the more glamorized things, and they don't want to talk about. I know Jay-Z a few years ago was helpful in bringing water to a region in Africa as far as getting an irrigation system in a country in Africa. He was responsible for that. He put his name, attached his name to that. But that really wasn't sexy news. So maybe it's a combination of that. Maybe these folks, you know, because of their art, conflicts with social responsibility. And on top of that, when they do socially responsible things, it's not really sexy. So the
there
media won't report it.
So you hit on it right there. Sorry about that, but you hit on it right there. Doing the right thing isn't sexy. Think about it. No one's talking about Common. No one's talking about myself. But Jay-Z, Kanye, these guys do something idiotic. You know, it's front page news. You know, but like Mr. Dean just pointed out, there is a lot of stuff that they have done behind the scenes that, you know, it's respectable and it should be highlighted, but no one ever highlights them, and as a result, they're stuck with a stigma, right or wrong.
I want the captain to come in on this, but see, the issue also, Darren, I'm hinting at this, I apologize if I'm repeating myself, but you have to look past Jay-Z's art to get to social responsibility. I didn't have to look past Sidney Poitier's art. I had to look past Ruben Dee's art. I didn't have to look. We have to close our eyes into what these guys do and then talk about all their positives. That conflict, that makes things difficult, Daryl. Even you would admit that. You can't talk about Big Pimpin' and have booties shaking in the video and then talk about giving folks water in Africa.
Here's the thing,
that's the problem.
You can bring up something from the past, but can a person change? Like, when does he get beyond what you're bringing up from the past? Like, so was Harry Belafonte always a good person? Like, is there things that we don't know about that somebody would just throw in his face and say, well, you did this to your wife back then? I mean, when does a person get to elevate? How many times are we going to drag them back to something before?
And by that note, okay, you know what? All those people that starred in gangster movies, you know what? That's their true nature. I can't do that. All these people that star in serial killer movies as a serial killer, you know, that's a part of their personality too. You can't get past that. You know, that's a part of them. That's always a part of them now. That's why that argument is stupid. All right? That's why this Harry Belafonte thing is stupid. Right, you were going in a right place with it, saying artists should be more socially active. Fine, but then you choose to attack two people who Mr. Dean read the list. The PR people put out the list. They have done a lot of good. That's the thing here. Who's deciding whose morality here? I don't like to judge other people unless they do something really stupid publicly. What has Jay-Z done stupid publicly right now to bring this on?
Well, Darryl, listen, we talked about this before when Phil Mushtick was on the show. And even we were fortunate enough to interview NC Light a few days ago. Even she admitted that there's a blurring between between these artists and what happens on the street, that the artists have a tendency to mix it up in the street. There's been death. Listen, we remember, Busta Rhymes, one of his friends was shot right next to him a few years ago. And then he couldn't be honest about what had happened because he would have jeopardized his quote-unquote street cred. See, when we had MC Light on the air and we talked about Self-Destruction, which came out 20 years ago, The hip-hop community from 30 years ago, 25 years ago, people asked them to speak because they were not directly involved with the shenanigans on the street at that point. Now, with the deaths of Big L, of Tupac, of Biggie, of a whole host of artists, of people being jailed, T.I. has been in jail, there's a whole roster of hip-hop artists that their art, I mean, there's people sitting in jail now. You almost have to go to jail to be authentic. There's a sense of street authenticity that's required to be on wax that wasn't really necessarily there 30 years ago. When you talk about someone who's doing a movie, you know, listen, when Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger do these violent films, they literally take off their war paint, put on a tuxedo. You know, there's less leeway because they are actors. They don't live with it. They don't live with the AK-47 the prop that they used in the film. These people are caught in airports with guns. They talk. They're doing jail for gun violence or for gun possession. They have blurred the sense of street reality.
Yeah. Well,
it's a different situation.
Are they blurring Batman? Is that guy blurring Batman? Then I mean, again, you can hold up any sort of media situation.
Not Christian Bale. The actor isn't. Christian Bale.
Well, his audience is the guy who's gonna walk inside a theater and do what he does and says he's a part of that universe. I'm just, you know what I mean? It's like you could call comparisons to all sorts of situations, black and white. I just think that a white actor gets the pass that he can leave it behind, and it's assumption that he does leave it behind. Well, you don't know. Maybe he is a gun nutter. Maybe he is a fool. But the black actor, you just immediately, or if he has if Ice Cube goes and plays a gangster in a movie, of course he must really be from the streets. You don't just automatically associate the white actor. Oh, he must be from that environment to act it so well. No, he's a great actor.
But these musicians don't pretend that they're acting. I mean, they'll tell you that they'll go into their whole bio. Jay-Z said he sold drugs before he did this. I mean, you know, listen, I understand. And you know, we he did come out with Niggas in Paris recently. I mean, you know, this, you know, he talks about popping bottles and a lavish lifestyle, and yet people. You know, the world is in financial distress. That's what I mean. That social responsibility is not there as far as their persona. Everyone else seems to be walking and walking, talking and talking to a certain degree. I think Harry Belafonte is from a different time, a different place, and he can speak authentically about this because he did risk more for it. As much as I love Michael Jordan has been critiqued for the last 20-some-odd years that – he doesn't speak about anything. He's not going to jeopardize his money.
But he doesn't have to. A person doesn't have to do that, though. You shouldn't be pulled down because you don't want to be like Harry Belafonte walking with King or whatever. I mean, that was great for you. But everybody's journey is different. Like, I don't understand why he has to be compared to what he did. He paved the way, so he shouldn't have to really do that if it worked.
Well, you know, so you have
if I chose not to do it, that shouldn't be a problem. Does a normal American citizen choose to be socially
responsible? There's another thing, too. When you talk about the Belafontes and you talk about the, all these other actors from the 50s and 60s, they come from a whole sophisticated line of thinking. They're extremely sophisticated people. These folks that we're talking about now are from the street. Literally, I don't think their sense of awareness is on the same level as someone like Cosby, and they're just not. And maybe we're expecting too much. I would agree with you in that sense, Mike. That I stopped asking these people to be something that they're not. In some regard, it would be nice, but I don't know.
Richard Pryor, Red Fox. I mean, that element in entertainment was there back then. Don't forget those guys either. There's a top guy in the game, Richard Pryor. I mean, he was there at their time, and nobody brings it. I mean, that sort of element is not new to today. They were saying nigga back way, even the whole career based off of the N-word.
That you can make an argument about that, but my only difference is that they don't represent an industry or a culture. You know, hip hop is a culture. Once it left entertainment and became a culture. Culture is a way of life. The definition of culture is a way of life. I think the stakes are greater with hip hop and with Jay-Z and Beyonce represent. They are cultural icons, cultural figures that are talked about incessantly on a daily basis.
So essentially, if you're born trash, you're going to stay trash. If you're born noble, you're going to stay noble. If you try to cross the either line to either help out or try to become something more, it'll never happen because you were born trash or you were born noble. Is that what you're trying to say here? Because I find that argument total crap.
Well, if you promote trash, Daryl, I mean, he's in the trash promotion business, isn't he?
I mean,
he has to own up. Listen, he has to own up for what he produces.
This is the Phil Mustard argument again. The man
okay.
is in the business. The man is in the nigga business. N-I-G-G-A. That is his business. And
okay.
they're helping.
Martin Scorsese, is he in the crap business?
I'm just trying. Look, it goes right back to the Harry Belafonte thing. You chose to attack two of the bigger names without doing the research. You answered the question. You threw out Jay-Z and Beyonce, and you were wrong. They set up scholarships. They help underprivileged children. They've supported stuff like cancer walks and literacy programs. They have done a lot without standing out front and saying, you know what, shoot all your bullets at me. That's the problem I have with this. You can keep on bringing up their past all you want. I'm dealing with the present. And the present is, sure, you may not like the stuff they put out. You may not, but you're human. You're able to think about it. But they have put their money into helping a lot of causes. That's why Harry Belafonte is wrong, and that's why you're wrong here.
Well, one thing, and this is in respect to what Mike Dean has said. We can make those comparisons between Scorsese and Jay-Z. The difference, I think, if there is one, is maybe what Scorsese does is detrimental to society at large. Maybe there is an argument there. But at the same time, we're talking about folks that are producing a topic, producing a product that is affecting black folk. This imagery is affecting us.
You don't think Scarface movie affects black people in the hood?
That's true. That's true. But it's a lot easier to see your mirror image doing it than it is an Italian man doing it. And Italians will tell you they suffer. Some people in the Italian community will tell you that they suffer for this imagery. Why do you think I'm here?
My point is the black people, those black kids who call themselves Irv Gotti and all these names are derived from
that's true.
People who aren't black.
It's
they're
true.
Suffering from it. They're not suffering from their image. They're suffering from the image they see in the media that they want to
live
for whatever.
But
those guys should
be
just as accountable to these guys here.
They should, but it's a lot easier to swallow when the mirror is looking at you doing it than some Italian man doing it. Although some of us have co-opted that, like you said, the Gotti and the Murder, Inc. thing. We don't know the history of Murder, Inc. going back to the 30s. Gentlemen, we got to revisit this next week. We got seconds remaining. It's been a feisty show, like I promised. We'll do it again on Wednesday. Mike, you can stop by any time. Darryl B., of course. Captain, we got to get on up out of here. Let's go with an oldie but goodie. MJ, Demo, Sunset Driver, Michael Jackson. We'll do it again. It's been a pleasure.